We've been friends a long time. We can discuss anything, right?
Sure, bud.
Well, I have an issue.
No kidding. You cheer for Boston.
An issue down there?
Hey, half of all guys experience erectile dysfunction. Heard of Felix? Felix connects you to a doctor for an assessment. No appointment, no pharmacy visit, no awkward conversations. Treatment is delivered discreetly to your door.
Sounds great.
I just wish you'd be more discreet about wearing that Boston jersey in Toronto.
Go to felix.ca/drive to start your online visit.
Oh, yes, it's Mail It In Friday. Jim Taddy, Frank Corrado, and Dave Festchuk with you as we go through a ton of topics here. First of all, Frankie C. and Dave, how are you guys doing today?
Buddy, fantastic. Are you kidding me? Here we go. I mean, we got the Leafs game after this. You and I, lucky me, I get to spend 6 hours with you tonight. Don't get much better than that, Tatman.
Guys, could not be better. Could not be better. I will be looking forward to listening to your Leaf game broadcast after this fine show. Frankie C., though, I'm wondering, with the emergence and the 15 minutes of fame that's been given to our good Toronto brethren, Mr. Frankie Lasagna, have you thought about a potential pasta nickname?
No, I don't have anything yet, but I'll tell you what, man, like he was on the show yesterday talking about how he's not a huge lasagna fan, and I guess he got some backlash from that. I think there was some people texting in, tweeting in. I think even Hayes and Noodles and O-Dog were saying, how can you not like lasagna? And I am telling you, with my culinary expertise, which is not very much, but lasagna is dead last on my list of pastas.
Wow.
There, you heard it here.
Wow. Wow.
Dead last.
Okay, nice knowing you. Nice knowing you.
Do you lose your Woodbridge citizenship for that?
I don't know. I don't know what happens. There might be people knocking at my door right now. We're doing the show remotely today, and I actually had a question for the Tatman. So I guess, you know, the Grappler was saying, do you guys want to set up a Zoom call so we can all see each other and kind of feed off each other that way? And Tatman, he turned it down. Like, he turned it down emphatically.
Yes.
So that leads me to wonder. That leads me to wonder what's going on at Tatman Enterprises, Yes Guy headquarters there. Is there maybe some underpants, maybe no shirt situation going on doing this show?
No, nothing like that, of course. No, it's just it's one less thing to worry about, because then this, you're looking at the Zoom and the listeners are not looking at the Zoom, and I'd just rather
Hey,
play
guy,
off
whatever
what
you say. I believe you.
Well, I
believe
you. And I think there was an option after I put the veto on it. But you know, in terms of what the other Frank said about how could you not like lasagna or what was said to him, I'm sure it's not the first time that he's heard that phrase.
No. I don't know, man. Like, for me, throw me a pen nail of vodka. Give me some, you know, I've been into this, the pasta lately without tomato sauce, a little olive oil, the casareccia with rapini and sausage. Buddy, that's like your Austin Matthews first overall pick for me right now.
Well, that sounds like a guy who's still training for a contract, a guy who still has not retired from professional hockey. Are we right there?
No announcement, but if you saw my gym routine these days, it's not quite NHL standards anymore, Dave. It's let's keep in shape and try not to let the waistline explode standards.
Okay.
Wow, I don't know how you fit in all the workouts around your meals. I mean, it gets a little crowded, doesn't it?
Well, how about this, guy? Think of this, okay? So Sunday, we're going to have football starting at 9 a.m. Like, if you had anything you could imagine meal-wise for that whole day, you could start at 8:30 in the morning right up until the late game. Like, I can guarantee you someone out there is putting on an absolute clinic as far as the feed bag goes from start to finish on Sunday, and there's so many things you can do.
I think that's definitely an IV routine, isn't it?
An IV routine.
Exactly.
Like, I'm thinking big-time breakfast of champions, right? You got to go eggs, bacon, pancakes, maybe if you're a French toast guy, for sure. And then the lunch routine has to be finger foods. It's got to be wings, pizza, you know, throw some chicken fingers in there. It's got to be something you can pick at throughout the day. You know, not necessarily a certain time, but it's things you're picking at. And then the late game, think about this. If you had one of those smokers and you start one of those smokers early in the morning and then 8 o'clock rolls around and you're pulling off a brisket for the late game. Are you kidding me? What a day. What a feast.
No, I like the sounds of that. I mean, I think I'm kind of shocked that, you know, you're speaking to us live from Woodbridge and you didn't throw in a charcuterie board in there. Al's brother would be appalled.
That's in there. That's something you can pick at throughout the day, Dave, right? Like that's a finger food you pick at periodically when you get a little bit of a growl going.
Oh, no doubt. No, I love that. That's one of the best things about sports for sure. But no, so I'm still like perplexed about this whole pasta nickname stuff. Like, so would you be like Frankie Fettuccine? You're saying what, Frankie Linguini alla vodka? It doesn't have the right ring to it.
No, but it doesn't. Oh, actually, no. Frankie Fettuccine is pretty good because I will tell you this, Dave, out of the long pastas, fettuccine would be my go-to. It's just spaghetti's a little thin, linguine's a little thicker, but man, fettuccine, like that pappardelle, just a little thicker. But I would be in for a fettuccine for sure.
I like a bucatini, but I'm with you on fettuccine.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't go wrong with bucatini. Wow, that's like an old school calabrese, which is very popular in this area. I think everyone I meet who's Italian, you know, it's like the first question you get, right? Oh, you're Italian? Oh, yeah, me too. Okay, where are you from in Italy? And then there's like this whittling down process that happens with every Italian you meet.
And what's yours? What's your answer to that question?
Well, I'll have you know, I am a citizen. I'm an Italian citizen and a passport holder. So I actually am Italian, even though I was born here. But I'm half Calabrese, half embarrassed. No, I'm just kidding. I'm half Calabrese, half Sicilian. The Sicilian side being my mom's side and the Calabrese being my dad's side. But listen, I've been to both places, like some of the best beaches you could ever visit, some of the best food, and such nice people. So I'm dying to get back there. Hopefully in next year we'll get back there for a little trip.
I think you should go and form a professional hockey league. I mean, you could be the big man.
They got one there. They got a league there. It's up in the north. They got a league. They got three teams now. Italy's got three teams playing in the Austrian league, which is actually pretty good. And because they're hosting the Olympics in 2026, I think they're making a push to get some guys playing on those teams. Because what you have to do is, if you're not born in Italy, you have to play 2 years. So I think you have to live there for 18 months, and then you're eligible to play on the team. So I think they're pumping some money in there to try and get some guys over there.
I tell you, then there's always the Italian Olympic team in 2026, Frankie. If you got a passport, you never know.
That's it. Yeah, that's exactly what Dave, that's what they're doing. They're trying to get guys over there to play in the league for 2 years so you can play on the Italian national team at the Olympics, because they're, you know, similar to what happened with China in Beijing. They're going to have a team playing, and I don't think they want to get the doors blown off them there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You could be the guy, man. You could be on that decor.
Yeah, that's a long time, man. That's a long ways away to go injury-free, but we'll see.
Bottom of the hour, we're going to have Steve Phillips on, our other guests on our broadcast today. Mike Johnson at 5:05, the obligatory yes guy, no guy at 5:30. Dave Poulin at 6:05, Josh Lundberg at 6:30. And then, of course, on to Maple Leaf Hockey as they're in Belleville against the Ottawa Senators. What else did I have to put in here? So we've got some topics to get into, and I'll get to that in a second. A reminder, September 30th today marks the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation and Orange Shirt Day, a nationwide day of learning and reflection honoring the children and survivors of Canada's residential school system, their families, and communities. For a deeper understanding of residential school truth, reconciliation, and calls to action, we encourage you to read Bob McKenzie's five-part series on TSN.ca entitled 781, A Story of Sports and Survival in Canadian Residential Schools. So we make that announcement there, and we'll repeat that throughout the course of the broadcast today. That scene last night, Tua, with the head snap, the violent, you know, the way his neck turned, just sickening, wasn't it?
It's ugly, man. It's ugly. I don't know, like, Dave, what do you see? Because I could tell you what I see from a player or a former player's point of view, but I'd be curious to get your kind of reporter or journalist take on what happened.
Well, I mean, to me, this is the very definition of why they have dubbed the NFL in the midst of the concussion crisis, which is sort of in the rear view and hasn't been a hot button topic for quite a few years. But this is why they call the NFL the league of denial, because the entire Tua Tagovailoa situation has been about the denial of multiple concussions. And we saw it writ large on our TV screens last night with that frightening neurological incident, if you want to call it that, just 4 days after he fell down on a field looking disoriented against the Buffalo Bills. The idea that the coach of the Miami Dolphins would stand on the lectern and tell us that, there was no concussion there. There was, and he can tell you with 100% certainty that he would never allow a player to put himself in harm's way. I mean, it's the ultimate in hypocrisy or delusion. I'm not sure which, but it definitely is the ultimate in denying that concussions even exist. And yet we know they do.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. So I look at it this way, right? So I've been in concussion protocol at the NHL level, and I never was diagnosed with a concussion. But every once in a while, you get one of those big hits, and you see stars a little bit, and you got to head to the dark room, is what they called it. So I've been in there, and I've seen the protocol. And I heard Luke Wilson talking about the NFL one a little while back, and it seemed very similar to the NHL one. They're going to ask you the months of the year. You got to do it backwards. You got to tell them what day it is, where we are, who we're playing, what you ate for lunch. Like, it's all these kinds of questions. But I'll be honest with you guys, I think even if you are in a little bit of a daze and you're a little startled, you can answer those questions quite well, because the amount of adrenaline that's running through your system in a game, like, you're talking about a buildup that, for a 7 p.m. game, this buildup happens, from 4:30 until 7 and in through the rest of the game. Like, you can kind of trick the system a little bit. And when I saw Tua last week stumble and fall, I didn't buy it for a second that it was a back injury.
No. Like,
there's no chance that, and you could see Tua even at one point kind of grab his helmet, and he does it for just a split second, but it's so subtle. But really what he's doing there is he's like shaking out the cobwebs. And it's such a, when you hurt your head or you hit your head, you always do that, but it's actually like, it's not like, you hurt your leg or something and you're scraping blood off or anything like that. It's not doing anything, but you think it's going to help. It's a little bit of like a defense mechanism or a coping mechanism. And I actually think they might have gone through the proper steps and the proper protocol, and Tua maybe was able to get through everything. So when you look at it, objectively, I guess, on the list of things in the protocol, he might have done everything. The bigger issue here is the protocol that's in place is probably not good enough, to screen players and get them the proper help they need, the proper rest they need. Like, looking at it on the surface, it probably doesn't take, someone who's a neurologist to say that Tua probably should not have even been playing in that game.
I just think it's really precarious. You're going to rely on a player who's been hit to sort of guide himself through the process. I mean, he's impaired. If he's injured, he's impaired. It just doesn't work for me. My question would be, when you're playing, and I've said this about many other issues, the players know exactly what's happening. So anybody on that field, especially as linemen, would understand what that hit meant. And certainly when he went down last night, you could see him trying not to hit his head. But that was a violent toss to the turf. I'm just wondering if they have to back off on how quarterbacks are tackled. I mean, I know there's rules in place, but I think they got to push that line back even further.
You know what, though? For me, I feel like the onus or the responsibility, the game is the game, right? I don't know how much we can change the game as far as the hits. And I think we've done a pretty good job of protecting quarterbacks even more as the years have gone on. Why can't we have a little more onus on, and listen, there's a lot of great doctors out there, there's a lot of great practitioners out there, but someone failed Tua. Someone in the Miami Dolphins organization, whether it was a doctor, a neurologist, a trainer, someone failed Tua, and it might have been multiple people. And to say it was Mike McDaniel, he's a coach. If you tell the coach your player is available, guess what? He's probably playing. There needs to be someone who steps up in that situation and says, this guy cannot play, and here's why. And if you don't like it, I will argue with you for hours on end to prove my point about it.
Yeah, you make a great point, Frankie, that you'd love to see a system where that could be true. But the problem is that nobody is incentivized to look out for the player.
Oh, right? For sure.
You know, the players aren't incentivized to look out for the player. In a league where, you know, there's so much money to be made and so, you know, little of it guaranteed, although quarterbacks have been able to, you know, carve out more of that guaranteed money, you've got to prove yourself every week, every Sunday to keep your job in that league. And Tua understands that. He's in a very, you know, precarious situation. He's got to prove himself in that league at this moment because he's definitely not a proven commodity outside of this situation. And it, as you know, coaches are definitely not incentivized not to play their best players if they think they can. And organizations aren't incentivized to not play their guys because they're trying to get maximum value out of the money they spend on these players.
For sure.
It's perverse.
Yeah, it's crazy. And think about this relationship, okay? So trainers, doctors within an organization, they work – I would say that they work for the players. I really do, because they're there to make sure that they're taken care of physically and in Tua's case, you can even say mentally, right? The problem is – These are employees that are paid by the team. And I think there's a little bit of a conflict there. When you when you have someone who's paid by the organization, but he's really supposed to be looking out for the player's best interest. And listen, I'm not going to blanket everyone and say this is an issue with every single team, because I've met some great people throughout my career who really do take care of players. But this presents a little bit of a problem, and where the trainer says, well, you know, I can only do so much because maybe the team's, you know, the team's saying one thing, and you know, I have to really push to get this guy in there. So, I think there's a little bit of a conflict there, and you know, not to say that that's what happened here, but it creates a delicate balance for these guys.
Well, I like what you said there, because this has been a sore spot for me in all professional sports for a number of years. The CBA dictates that the owners look after their side and the players look after their side. There's really nobody in the middle with an objective view on what's best for both. It's, you know, it's a trade-off, right? I'll give you this if you give me that, but that doesn't mean it's right. You know, I go back to that scene last night when he lands on the turf and he's thrown into the turf in a vicious manner. You can see the torque on his neck. I mean, the bottom line is the NFL, like all leagues, is selling entertainment. That is not entertainment. So I don't know what you do, but you can't have that happen on a regular basis. I mean, Cam Newton was a really good example of that too. Yeah, that's of no value to anybody.
And why did we need to see that replay so many times?
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, look, you know, it's a tough situation. You know what the fear is, guys. Like I've been writing about this for I don't know how many years now. It's been a hot button topic at different times over the last 25 years. And you know, one of the things that when you really get down to the brass tacks and you talk to people, because I agree with you, Frankie, it's not like everybody, these aren't bad people by definition. They're just looking out for themselves. They're looking out for their best interest. They're doing their jobs largely. They're working.
And they want to
know who they
work
for.
Dave. They want to keep their jobs too.
Right. And the thing that you always come back to is, A, yeah, you're doing your job, but you're also getting paid by the League of Denial when you work in the NFL. And by the way, the NHL, and you know this, Frankie, there are some very good people that work in that league and very good doctors. But this is a league, the NHL is a league that has refused, you know, to this day to acknowledge the link between repetitive concussions and CTE, which is widely assumed and believed by the best experts that I've talked to. And yet, you know, as recently as this summer, Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner, who's also, you know, what I believe to be a good man, but knows who he works for, has acknowledged that, you know, they don't believe that there is a link there. And the best science that they've been able to read doesn't tell them that, which is disingenuous at best. But the problem is, guys, there's a real fear from people that run these leagues that, like you say, Frankie, you got to do more to protect the quarterbacks. There are many people who say they've already done too much to protect the quarterbacks, right?
Right.
You know, you talk about how they worry about, you know, repetitive concussion in hockey to this day. And there are a lot of people who believe they've done way too much to soften up the game and take out hitting and take out a lot of what people enjoyed about the game, which was, frankly, the violence.
Yeah.
So it's a tough line to walk. These are games that have built their following on a gladiatorial style, especially football. And, you know, the idea that you're just going to take out hitting, you're not going to turn it into flag football tomorrow.
Nope.
But you're always going to get that resistance. And I think we're going to be having these conversations for many years to come because of that.
And listen, I was, as a player, I was never naive to the fact that when I played a game, when I went out for practice, there was a chance that I was going to get my bell rung or, you know, maybe get a concussion, which I was lucky. I never got diagnosed with a concussion once in my career. But I was not naive to the fact that I was putting myself in harm's way. And I think with what we've seen from retired players now, it's okay to want to protect players so they can have a life after hockey. You know, it's way too often we're hearing guys who, you know, they're addicted to the pills, or, you know, they can't spend too much time with their kids in a bright room, and they need to be in the dark. Like, all these kinds of things, man. Like, I think, yes, we still want the element of the game with I don't want to call it violence, but we still want an edgy game, an upbeat game, and we want all that, but, you know, guys are retiring at 30 and they have their whole lives ahead of them. I think there's something very important there that we need to take care of.
Okay, so let's return to the topic that we started on. It was food, oddly enough. So the question would be, how many hot dogs could you eat in one baseball game, or how many hot dogs would you care to eat in a baseball game? Frankie, I'm sure you could power away double figures.
Listen, you have seen me eat, okay? You understand that I eat salads and power bowls.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't have time for hot dogs, okay? But if I had to for you, let's see, at a baseball game, I feel like over five would be an acceptable answer.
Oh come on. Frank,
per
your name.
Per inning.
Your name is Frank. I mean, you're Frankie Frankfurter, are you not? Come on here. I mean, you got to
I don't
be
know. I've never
five.
I don't eat. This is the thing. I don't eat hot dogs. I don't even know what it's like. This is
Come
foreign
on.
Territory for me,
is
guys.
Is your body that Taddy, wow. I don't understand this. I'm having a hard time buying this one. He's the Italian guy who does not
too,
like lasagna, and he's never eaten hot dogs. Yeah. I'm having a hard time digesting this. Yeah. Let's say.
You know what that is? You know what that is? Frankie's... That's called being a fraud, right there.
The fraudometer is ringing.
Say.
Ding ding ding.
The fraudometer is going crazy right now.
Do not look out your window. There could be a lineup out there.
Okay, so let's break this down, though, guys, because, like, we had Dollar Hot Dog Night last night down at the Dome, and what did they sell? The Grappler tweeted it over, sent over the tweet on the group chat. 50,000 $1 hot dogs at the game
What's
last
that,
night.
What's that, like 1.3 per person in the stadium? Is that what it works out to?
Yeah,
something like that.
Because there's only 40,000 there, right? There were only 40,000 people there. But you got to think, like, what did Joey Chestnut at the last 4th of July, he did, what, 63 in I don't know how many
he's
minutes?
Not like, he's 60s. Is he pushing 70s every once in a while?
I think he's been in that range. So, and that's got to be less than a baseball game. See, I've had these dogs. I've had the Dollar Dogs. Oh. They're not large dogs. They're not like jumbo foot-long dogs. These are kind of like... You know, they're decent-sized dogs. They're snack-sized dogs, I would say. So I'm going to put...
Oh, okay. Hold on. No one told me they're, like, snack-sized.
Yeah. They're not huge.
Okay, so double my answer. Double. Go to 10. That's the new over-under.
Oh, 10. Come on. That's per inning. 10 in a game is nothing.
No way.
Tad, man, what do you think you could... What do you think you could get down there?
I can't eat like that. It's not going to be pretty. I mean, I know I could suck back.
Yeah, right. That's so
15,
rich coming
not,
from
I'm not
Taddy.
Gonna enjoy
you
got
to see. Yeah, it's rich coming from Taddy. You got to see when we do Leaf games at the Scotiabank Arena when they walk by with the pizza tray.
Oh yeah.
It's like,
boom.
Oh
God,
yeah. Hey
God.
Guy, do you see it? Hey guy, here we go. There's three.
Yeah.
I was gonna say.
Yeah,
we're
gonna build up for the big broadcast.
When the Tat Man gets the nod to be first in line for the pizza, like one of the multiple pizzas is gone. Like he takes essentially a whole wheel.
You know what the best is?
The best is
when there's a little bit of a replenishment that's been happening now. I think in the late in the second period there was a little replenishment.
No, don't say
that
anything.
And someone on our staff might have replenished his own barrel.
Nice.
Before the post game show, I'm not going to name names.
I love it. I love it.
I think eating habits have changed. No, oh sure. come on. Somebody's going to pour back 30 to 40. I mean, I don't want to be that.
No
guy,
way.
But, you know, I
no
think,
one's putting
I think,
back
I,
30
okay.
of those.
Okay, if you
over a nine inning ball game.
Let's frame it this way, Frankie.
Man.
Frankie Frankfurter, let's frame it this way. If you brought all the stars of TSN radio down to the Dome on any given night and you gave them a nine-inning, you know, no bottomless budget for as many dollar dogs as they wanted. You had the likes of Al's brother. You had Carlo. You had O-Dog. You had Hayes, who's a man with a healthy appetite. Noodles is more like Noodles. You, treats his body as a temple. You know, I got to think Al's brother and Hayes and Carlo especially. AK can put it back. These guys are going to be
the grappler's 7 feet tall.
Oh, the grappler! Yeah, I didn't even think about the grappler.
210 pounds.
I mean, you're talking. The grappler could do 45. He could do 5 an inning.
If we had a TSN 1050 outing that day, the 50,000 total might have gone up to 60,000 total, just from TSN 1050 employees only.
Yeah. And oh yeah, remember that story? I remember Arad, of course, the great producer of First Up. Arad tells a story of blowing like $100 Canadian dollars on McDonald's burgers and eating them all. Oh. Like $100 worth of burgers. Arad did that as a prank or like a dare from one of his one of his buddies who had $100 to throw away somehow. And so like that guy himself, like between the grappler, Arad, the producers would be hell of a contest.
Another 10,000. If TSN 1050 is in the building, another 10,000, no problem.
No doubt.
Well, we'll get scientific now. Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB analyst, will join us next. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, tsn1050.ca, also available on the iHeartRadio app. Well, it's the mail-in Friday edition of Overdrive. Jim Taddy, Frankie Corrado, Dave Festchuk with you. Everybody else is off. The Jays aren't. They're at home to Boston this weekend. Manoa tonight, Stripling tomorrow, and on Sunday, Gausman will be in. And so, you know, and then there's three more games, and then, of course, on to the playoffs. Let's get further analysis now. Let's bring in Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB analyst. Steve, welcome. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing great, Jim. Good to be with you.
Our pleasure to have you. So as you look at the last six games and getting set for the playoffs, what did the Jays – I mean, they're in, but they want to solidify things. So how do they sort of go about their next six games?
So, you know, I am not huge on any big rest for anybody. You know, I know they clinched and everything else, but they need to clinch home field advantage and to be the number one wild card team right now. And so I think they need to play their guys. I think they need to go out there and be aggressive and perform. I think they need to hustle and you know, be accountable for their decision-making and judgment on, you know, balls off the wall, balls in the corner. They need to really focus on the little things right now because in the postseason, little things make a difference and really start to get the line moving and connect their at-bats in their lineup to get it going. And so, you know, there's a lot to do. Sure they clinched, it's great, but I don't think they should change anything. I think they just need to keep playing regular baseball and not look for days because they need to clinch that home field advantage to be the number one wild card team.
Steve, as we get closer to the end of the season, if you're the GM, how much weight or thought, I guess, are you going to put into the decision? You know, if it comes down to the last game and you need to start Manoa or Gausman and you're looking for that home field advantage, but then you might not have one of those guys in games one or two or maybe even three. I mean, how much would you weigh that decision on the last week of the season?
So I think that because it's a three-game series, I would pitch whoever's in line to help me win that game and to qualify for home field advantage. Because, you know, I look at it and think that you know, if it's Manoa and you've got Gausman and Stripling and Barrios, I'm okay. And you could probably work Manoa into the back end if a third game comes up again. And so I'm playing it to get the home field advantage. So I would start whoever's in line in that game. I'm not holding somebody back. I'm not going to set it up to be, you know, to make sure I've got my top two guys necessarily lined up for the wild card, you know, best out of three. I'm gonna win to get the home field for that. I really am.
Steve, as we get closer, you know, obviously this is the first year with the expanded format. There's more scrutiny of the format itself, and you can make the case in a lot of ways that it doesn't make a lot of sense because if you finish – in the top two wild card positions, you're going to play one versus two. That third team is going to get Cleveland, and they will also avoid Houston in the division series, whereas the 1-2 matchup is going to get the Yankees. I mean, that could just be obviously an anomaly of the current situation. But what do you make of the idea that in some ways you're better served to have the three spot and not have to play Houston in the second round?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And I think that the idea that, I think probably is that they reseed after the wild card round. That to me would be the smartest thing to do, because we're always going to have, we'll likely have a better record than the third division winner. I think that's not going to be an uncommon thing. And so I think that it should be accounted for. I would like to see them reseed after the wild card round and the division series. I think it makes sense to be able to do that. And I think it's fairer, more fair for the, the best overall record and how they're going to match up with it. And I think it's the better and I think fairer way to do it for everybody. I don't know whether there's an appetite for it, but I think it makes sense. Some other sports reseed. I think it should be done in baseball, too.
Let's go back to earlier this week. So we had some sloppy play from Vladdy and Bo Bichette. As a team manager, I mean, how fine a line do you have to travel to deal with that? Obviously there's got to be little tolerance for that. There has to be, like, zero tolerance. Am I right?
So here's the thing. I think that the Teoscar Hernandez play on Monday and Vladdy on Tuesday, to me, those were not lack of hustle. Those were lack of judgment. If they had known, if they had better judgment that the ball wasn't out of the ballpark, they would have hustled. And so it was bad judgment on their part. And what I think the message is to eliminate judgment, that there is no such thing as you're going to decide what happens to the ball. You just, when you hit it, you sprint out of the batter's box. That's the way we're going to play from now on. That's what I want to hold you accountable for. I don't want you to make a better decision to know that if it's out, it's okay to jog. I want you to sprint. And once you know it's out, then go ahead and slow down. But there's no jogging and then realizing, oh, geez, I need to sprint. I need you to sprint and then realize that you need to slow down. And I think I always believe that guys should bust it out of the box. That's what I did as a player in the minor league. But I realize that over 162 games, that there's a time that a ground ball was short, that I actually have gotten to the point where I'm okay if a guy give me a good, sprint down the line, but you don't have to be the false hustle guy either. And I'm willing to live with pulling back a little bit in order to get you energy to get more games out of you. But when it comes to these sorts of plays where it's going to be a bang-bang play, I need all the effort all the time.
Steve, I saw a tweet today that the Jays are going to be celebrating clinching a wild card spot tonight. And maybe one guy who really, really deserves to celebrate would be Alek Manoah. I just saw that he has a 2.65 ERA through his first 50 career starts, and that's the lowest ERA in Blue Jays history through a pitcher's first MLB starts. And when you think about some of the great pitchers that have come through this organization, I mean, does that even put it in more perspective of how impressive Manoah has been to get his career started?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this kid remember, all we heard about was Nate Pearson, and Manoah lapped him. And sure, injury has been part of that for Pearson, but Alek Manoah came to the major leagues, and he was so prepared to be good right out of the gate. Both maturity, controlling his emotions, the quality of his stuff, the execution, the repeatability of his delivery and release point, and the plan and attack, the preparation, the fielding of his position, the holding of runners. I mean, he's the whole package, and he's a workhorse and a bulldog. And so it really is remarkable. And, I mean, there's no question in my mind he's going to be an ace for a lot of years. He's a big, burly guy. He's going to have great stamina and, I think, longevity for his career, and he's a leader on the team. He's a fighter, and so, yeah, I think the ceiling is untapped for where he's going to go, and he really is going to be an ace and one of the best pitchers in baseball probably for the next decade.
Okay, Steve, another wrinkle of the new playoff format is how many teams should be able to celebrate with the goggles and the champagne for making the playoffs. I understand the Yankees did it the other night. They won the division. But should any old wild card team get to celebrate now that we got six teams in each league making the playoffs? How do you see that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
100%. Oh, yeah. And here's the thing. They got to lose the goggles. That's a little soft for me. Like old school. I mean, you've got to enjoy the burn for your eyes. So I'm not in favor of goggles, but I'm all in favor of celebration, because what it does is that it is reinforcing in its nature. It's like a trophy. It's even better than money, because the joy, like I'm telling you, you know, when my teams made the playoffs and we won the wild card 2 years in a row, and we celebrated, no, we had a one game wild card, you know, potential matchup. It is so reinforcing that I want to do it again. It is, you know, what did we do behavior wise to get us to this point? Let's do it again. And so I'm all for as many celebrations as possible. And you know, the brain freeze that comes with the ice cold champagne on your head, the eyes burning with it as well. I am all in for everybody to have champagne celebrations and families. Like my kids would do, you know, sparkling cider celebrations, pouring all over each other as well when we clinch, just because they thought this is the coolest thing ever. So I'm all in on champagne celebrations.
Okay, going to put you on the spot. If we talked a month ago and had concerns about the Jays, have they been alleviated? What are your thoughts on this team with six games to go?
Well, I still have the thought of, will the real Blue Jays please stand up? You know, they're just streaky, and they can be streaky in both directions. Now, they've been on a longer run of success right now, but it still feels like, you know, the emotions of a loss can they stay attached to it sometimes. The good news, though, is the emotions to a win they can stay attached to, too. They're one of those teams that can be scary because they can go on a run, right? And it's not necessarily the best team that wins and goes to the World Series and wins it. It's the team playing the best. And, you know, it comes down to, you know, for all of the teams you look at, they can all certainly find a pathway to get to the World Series and win. And the question is, what's your margin for error? And I think the Astros have the greatest margin for error in the American League, that they can have some things go wrong, but they've got so much talent, so much depth, so much offense, so much defense and pitching that they can, you know, they can come back, lose a game or two, and still rattle off three in a row and win a series. You know, I think that you know, the Yankees, I think, have less margin for error. I think Seattle and Toronto have probably the second and third most margin for error, that they can lose a game and still come back and win a series because of the quality and depth of talent. So, look, they're a fun team. They can run the table. I mean, they could sweep each series and run the table. I don't think they will, but I do think that they've got a chance to be a really tough out in the playoffs.
Steve, taking a look at the NL, going to be a pretty big series with the Braves and the Mets. And for the Mets, they're going to have DeGrom and Scherzer going for the first two games. How surprised would you be if the Mets did not win the division at this point?
Well, I'd be surprised. I mean, here's the thing. They've got a one-game advantage, which is great. Also, they have this in-season series. They're winning 9-7 right now. They won 9 out of 16. They need to win one of the three over the weekend to get the tiebreaker in their favor. So they've got that going as well. And so if they're able to, even if they lose two out of three, they get the tiebreaker, and so they'll have the advantage. Plus, I like the Mets playing the Nationals more than I like the Braves playing the Marlins, because the Marlins, Sandy Alcantara is starting tonight for the Marlins, which lines him up for Wednesday, the last day of the regular season against Atlanta. And so, you know, I think that it'll be a tougher matchup for the Braves than the Mets. So, yeah, and for the Mets, I think that, I mean, really for either one of them, I think for the Mets or Braves, if either one of them is the wild card team, I think it kills their chances of winning a World Series. I do, because, you know, the privilege you get as the wild card team is that you'll likely play the Padres, and if you win that, then you have to play the Dodgers. And if you win that, then you have to play likely the Mets or the Braves, whichever one's the other team there. So I think winning the division is critical to the World Series chances of the Mets and Braves.
Steve, appreciate your time. Thanks very much. Enjoy your weekend.
You bet. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. That's Steve Phillips, TSN MLB analyst. And, you know, the stretch run is here. Six games left and all kinds of hijinks planned and unplanned. This is exciting. I love this. I mean, you've got a collision of hockey, basketball starting up, obviously football, both football leagues, and now the serious stuff in baseball. Doesn't get any better than that, does it?
No, this is it, man. Every night on television's like sports heaven. And leading up to the playoffs for baseball is so cool because, and I was not into baseball like my whole life. I've gotten into baseball more recently. But when you get into the playoffs and every pitch, you know, the outcome of the game is basically, you know, up for grabs. It's so intense, and at any point, you know, any stroke of the bat, like the game can be swayed each way, and then you package that up with hockey starting, football going. It's crazy. Like that, I need like 4 or 5 TVs right now.
And it's hard to beat the feeling of playoff baseball. It really is. And as much as I'm a bit of a purist, and I sort of think in some ways it's wrong to have this many teams in the playoffs. It seems right that it's, you just see so much more excitement in all these markets, and obviously a lot more excitement in Toronto now that you know you clinch rather than if you were kind of life and death for a playoff spot and you get a season like last year where you come out one game short of getting there. So I'm all for it because you're right, Frankie. Like the stakes of each pitch, the importance of the strategy and the details, as Steve Phillips pointed out, the details matter, man, in a way they just don't over 162, and I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, coming up next, the Leafs with an interesting theory about what to do with Mitch Marner. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050, TSN1050.ca, also available on the iHeartRadio app. Oh, yes, guys, the mail-in edition, Taddy Corrado and Festchuk with you on this Friday. And so, guys, here's the ultimate. And we were talking about this actually at the Scotiabank Arena the other night when two defensemen went down, and Kerfoot and Yarncroke were on the blue line. Mitch Marner on the blue line. Frankie C., what do you think?
I don't know, man. It seems a little gimmicky to me. Like, it's not something you're going to do to start a game, that's for sure. And it's not something you're ever going to do in a defensive zone face-off situation. So I was trying to think, when I heard Sheldon Keefe talking about this, when are you actually going to use Mitch Marner on defense? And you can guarantee full-on lock it's going to be an offensive zone face-off, right? And then what juncture of the game? Well, I guess if you're down a goal or a couple goals, I would probably do it if you're down more than two or more goals, and maybe like there's more than 5 minutes left in the game. You're not quite ready to pull the goalie let, but you want to maybe have some kind of sustained offensive zone pressure. So, okay, we have our best face-off guy. Maybe it's Matthews, maybe it's Tavares. We know we have a 55-60% chance of winning that face-off to Riley, let's say. And then from there, once it gets into Marner's hands and we're in, you know, we get into our power play formation, but we're 5-on-5, maybe we can find a way to create a little offense. But I think it's such a niche thing. I don't think it's going to be something we're going to be seeing often. A, because the Leafs are probably going to have the lead more often than not. And B, it's like you have options on defense. You know, like if you go down 2, 3, 4 goals because you're doing this, you're not giving yourself a chance anyways. But yeah, I mean, I could see it. It could happen.
Yeah, I think it's situational, like Frankie says. Like, this is it's a special deployment. It is kind of like something like, you don't want to pull the goalie, but how do you get a little more offensive and get a little more tilted toward the offensive side of the puck? Put out 4 forwards. No defenseman wants to hear that, of course. I know defensemen shudder at the idea.
I'd be rattled.
Exactly.
If I'm Sandin, well, I guess it's not fair to put Sandin's name into it, but if I'm an offensive puck moving defenseman and now I'm watching 4 forwards play 5-on-5, I'm like, what am I? Like you don't think I can pass the puck? I've been playing defense my whole life. Like, this is what I do. This is my game, right?
Exactly. No, and I think, like, you know, people always, the smart guys in the sports business that I know that know both leagues, the NBA and the NHL, always say, you know, the NHL is a decade behind the NBA on a lot of things, right? And when you, what's happening in the NBA? They're simple, you know, they're not the same game, but they're both 5-man flow games, I guess 6 if you got a goalie. But, and what's happening in the NBA is you know, we're seeing the Raptors pioneering it, this idea of positionless basketball, the idea that everybody can play every position. And if you could put, you know, your ideal five guys out there in any given situation, wouldn't you want five guys who could do it all, like could play defense if they needed to and could play forward and could score goals? Hey, the Leafs have had guys in their history who've played both positions at a very high level. I mean, Wendell Clark scored 46 goals as a forward. He came in as a defenseman. Gary Lehman had a 50-goal year. He played defense more than occasionally. And then you know the story of Sergei Fedorov and Scotty Bowman saying he could have been an all-NHL defenseman, and he occasionally did play him at defense.
There are
Detroit
outliers. You got to do this. You got to ask every forward on the team to skate backwards, and you'll have a great laugh because most forwards don't know how to skate backwards.
Exactly. Yeah. And then Marner can. Like, Marner can skate backwards really well. Yeah. He's a wonderful skater on both.
Yeah, NHL. There's NHL going. Players. There's NHL forwards who have no idea how to skate backwards. Guaranteed. I know it. I've seen it.
We want a full list, Frankie, so you can work on that in the break. I like what you said, though. I agree. In situations, Marner could be used back there. I don't think you have to go Sergei Fedorov with that, but it is an option. Coming up in the next hour, Mike Johnson will be by. Yes Guy, No Guy, Dave Poulin in hour number three. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.